Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scottish Football Brotherhood. I understand it's been a long time since all of you have heard my voice, Stefan's voice, MD's voice. Let me just kind of go back in time to Martin McFly a wee bit here. Since last time recorded, Hearts beat Celtic 3-1. That was the weekend. We're meant to record it. I can't really remember what happened. Never happened for us. Brendan Rodgers left the next day, resignation or sack him. It says resignation on paper, we're not too sure. He still hasn't been replaced. Dermot Desmond came up with that scathing statement, and then Martin O'Neill returned and won 3 out of 4 of his games. That we'll go touch on him a wee bit later, because that could be more than the 4 games. And of course, Danny Rowe has started to hit the ground running a wee bit at Rangers as well. So a lot to... We're not going to cover all the last 2 weeks of Scottish football in this episode. We're only going to cover the last weekend, but Stefan, I'm joining with my good mate Stefan. Stefan, that's just what happens when we miss a couple of weeks of recording, isn't it?
Scottish football moves fast when the mics are down. Whirlwind couple of weeks, to be fair. A lot of change at Celtic after a disappointing performance at Tynecastle, Danny Rowe hitting the ground running at Rangers. Domestically speaking, Tony Bloom and Derek McInnes have got Hearts rocking. I don't know, is there anything we've not spoken about? Cup semi-finals, St Mirren and Celtic are both in there. Good couple of weeks.
Aye, a good couple of weeks indeed. We'll get straight into the action now of the weekend just gone. We'll start at the man we're talking about, Martin O'Neill, his Celtic side. It was, as Martin O'Neill would say, wave after wave after wave of attack. Celtic 4, Kilmarnock 0. Johnny Kenny with the only goal of the first half before goals from Kieran Tierney and late goals from Dyson Maeda and then on the end goals. Penalty secured a 4-0 win over Kilmarnock. Stefan, just like I said, we've not recorded for a couple of weeks. How surprised were you that Martin O'Neill got the job, and what have you made of, how surprised are you how kind of good a job he's done?
Look, I'm not going to lie to you. When I read the statement, I thought, okay. I was like, Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney. I was a little bit, put it this way, I was surprised. It really did catch me off guard. I didn't think they would go that outside the box, but they have literally went outside the box and went to a box 20 years back. But listen, it looks like under, so far, out of 3 of the 4 games, and if we're speaking fully domestically, it looks like they've went into a box and brought out a gem, because it's working right now. And if there was a ideal solution out there that was going to see Celtic be sort of transferred from the hands of Brendan Rodgers into the hands of someone new, who better than to carry it than the safe pair of hands that Martin O'Neill was for Celtic 25 years ago. So yeah, surprising, but I don't think people were surprised at the fact that he came in and galvanised the squad and looks like he's got a tune out of this team. So yeah, surprised, but not surprised, if that can make any sense to you.
No, I kind of get what you're saying. I almost went over my head, because I got the, oh, another thing to mention what's happened the last 2 weeks. Martin O'Neill called me 12 years old.
Moment in the
it was me asking my question at a press conference, in case anybody's listening, some of you didn't know by now that was me. I said I look about 12, which is really funny. But I almost escaped me when I read the statement. I was that shocked when I saw the headline. You obviously get the notification through on your phone, click on a statement. I thought it was going to be like Michael Nicholson's left or something like that. But it was Brendan Rodgers has resigned. I've ran down to show my dad, and then he was reading through a statement on my phone, and then that's when I seen it. So I almost completely missed it entirely. But and I said I've always wanted to watch a Martin O'Neill Celtic team, but this is not how I had it planned out. But more about the game itself rather than Martin O'Neill. Jamai Simpson-Pusey made his Celtic debut, the kind of forgotten man. Well, I said less about Martin O'Neill, more about the game, but I'm going back onto the Northern Irishman just now. Do you think he's on a mission to make Brendan Rodgers look as stupid as he can? Because he brought Callum Osmond into the squad, who was a hero in the Cup semi-final. He's playing Pusey, who hardly got into a squad under Brendan Rodgers. So he's really going towards the sort of toolbox, if you will, that Brendan Rodgers kind of put in the shed and locked away. You know what I mean?
Yes, he absolutely is, because when you've seen Callum Osmond was in the team, when you've seen Jamai Simpson-Pusey was in the team, you're thinking he is absolutely on a mission. And look, I'm all for it. I've always said that Brendan Rodgers has always had a problem playing young players. He always had if they weren't established, he always had an issue with playing them. We never seen anything out of Pusey until the weekend. By the way, looks like a decent player. Looked comfortable on the ball. Had a good bit of pace. Thought he offered a lot to Celtic in that area of the park where they are really, really short on. With Alistair Johnston now going under successful hamstring surgery, according to his latest Instagram post, that position has needed a bit of work. Colby Donovan came in and did well. I don't necessarily know what's happened to him, but he came in, did well, didn't really put a foot wrong for me. Less said about Anthony Ralston, the better, because you've seen from the display in Midtjylland last week, really is a footballer, in my opinion, that is out his depth. So it was nice to see Pusey come in and sort of take that position on, and hopefully it's one that he can hold on to. And that's like ongoing injury crisis that Celtic seem to have.
Yeah, talking about Celtic injuries, Marcel Cerracchi, he picked up what we think is a hamstring injury in the first half of that game as well. Just one last point on Celtic before we move on to the losers, Kilmarnock. Do you think, how am I going to word this? Do you think it's evident how much the players have relished playing under Martin O'Neill so far? I know it's only four games, but do you think there was a bit of animosity maybe between the players and the manager with Brendan Rodgers, because the change has kind of been night and day?
Yeah, it's really been night and day. There's been such a stark change in the behaviour, the body language of some players, and I'm not a body language expert, but the players seem more up for it. They seem more driven, more committed. I'm going to be really honest. Everyone always talks about Rio Hatate, and on his day he can be the best midfielder in Scotland, and I'll often use the phrase, well, on his day doesn't come round quite enough because his day isn't there quite enough. Since Martin O'Neill's come in, does seem like a player that's a little bit rejuvenated, seems back to his old self under Ange Postecoglou, had a really good game on Saturday. I think there is an element to that, that there probably was a staleness around the club, there probably was a little bit of animosity around the club. Brendan Rodgers had likened his squad to a Honda Civic. I'm going to be honest, I think if a professional footballer, as you hear that, you think, what are you talking about? You're comparing me, an athlete, to a bang average car. I mean, I would be pretty annoyed. So yeah, do I think they've stopped playing for him? I think Brendan Rodgers lost the dressing room.
It'll be interesting to hear it all come out in the wash when Brendan Rodgers says, if he says anything, actually. I was about to say when he says something, but there's no guarantee. I actually don't think he will say anything. But again, I'm digressing a wee bit. We'll move on to Kilmarnock. That's five defeats in a row, albeit they've played Hearts, they've played Rangers, they've played Celtic, and that's three of those five. But I'm looking at their fixture list. There's no game I'm looking at and I'm going, they're going to, yeah, that's a chance for Kilmarnock to get on board. They're one of the, I would say at this stage, one of the whipping boys of the league. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with it. Losing their last five, and then you look at their next five, they've got Motherwell, Dundee United, Hearts again, Rangers again, Aberdeen again. Even then after that, you've got a somewhat decent Falkirk, running rampant St Mirren. Well, until this weekend they were, at least anyway. Before they even get to Dundee, and that's not until the 30th of December, so it is a bit of a hectic schedule for Kilmarnock. I mean, I think they're lucky if they pick up one win, if that. So yeah, that sort of whipping boys of the league could continue.
And then, do you think there's serious threats for relegation, or do you think they'll be too strong?
In terms of relegation, I think currently sitting in 10th, I think they'll be around that mark. I think they'll be around the 9, 10, 11 spot. I don't think they'll get relegated. I think they have too good a squad to get relegated when you compare it to the teams that are below them in Dundee and Livingston. I don't think so. But I don't know is the honest answer. Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. I'm not the biggest fan of Stuart Kettwell, to be honest. But I was going to say hopefully I've done it around, but if Kilmarnock fans are listening, I don't really care. But we'll move on to Dundee and Rangers. Dundee 0, Rangers 3. Nico Raskin got the away side off to a flyer 9 minutes in, and then Mikey Moore scored, I think it's his first goal for Rangers.
Yep.
Yeah, just 5 minutes later. Yep. And I had another one disallowed before Gassama completed, I was going to say completed the route, but you know what I mean, in the 90th minute. It's a big win for Rangers, isn't it, Stefan? Danny Rowe is starting to pick up a wee bit of steam.
Yeah, it was a really strong victory. Dens Park, as Celtic fans will have realised, wasn't an easy place to go earlier on in the season. So for Rangers to go there and pick up 3 points as well as a comfortable 3-0 win, I don't think you can ask for any more than that for Danny Rowe, and I don't think he can ask any more for his players, and I don't think the fans can ask any more from the team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he's... Like the start to the season, if you look at the games that he's actually lost, Roma, any team can lose to Roma and put in Europe on their day. I don't know how strong Roma are compared to how in the past, but you know, I'm going for a tangent. Celtic in a semi-final, especially if that's your fourth game as manager. Well, Celtic, Rangers are always going to lose to Celtic, Celtic are always going to lose to Rangers, that's just how it goes. And then obviously I think the only slight, maybe his first game, 3-0 defeat to the team third in the Norwegian League. But again, he was in the job of a matter of 2 days. It's a bit unfair to put that on him. Look, the Rangers fans are certainly getting behind him. I know he wasn't everybody's first choice. Look, it probably wasn't even the Rangers hierarchy's first choice. But he's really got a chance to do something special, I think. And I think a lot of Celtic fans would, maybe with hearts, kind of slip him up. We'll get into them in a wee couple of minutes. But Celtic fans would kind of check their shoulder a wee bit more towards Rangers. Whereas if Russell Martin was the case, they'd be hardly in sight.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Rangers up until this point haven't been an issue for Celtic. It's not an issue that Celtic fans have looked at Rangers in the table and thought, God, they're closing up on us. It's more likely been, look at them languishing down at the bottom half of the table. Now, under Danny Rowe, it looks like they have a little bit of resurgence, and only, 5 points off of Celtic, 12 points off of Hearts. I said it earlier on in a podcast a few weeks back, the league's not done by any stretch of the imagination. 7 points is in October and November is nothing. The same goes for 12 points in November. So, you know, the league is not over by any means, and Hearts will drop points. But equally, so will Celtic and Rangers, you would imagine, unless both of them go on an unimaginable run and beat every team bar each other. You know, it would be generational, but yeah, league's not done. I think Rangers will most likely finish that third or second spot. First and second. Who knows? That's still up for grabs.
Yeah, it all depends how well Hearts can finish. Well, not fit. All depends on how well Hearts can, if they can keep up the sort of run of form that they're on just now. But I'm looking at the Rangers' next fixtures. They've got Livingston at home, Braga at home. I know Braga beat Celtic at Celtic Park, but it's a winnable game. Falkirk at home, and then it gets a wee bit trickier with Dundee and Kilmarnock away back to back. But then after that, Fenwick Forest at home. So that's six winnable games for Rangers.
Yep.
Six. And then if you win six games in a row, any manager's confidence goes so far in football.
I think it would be hard for Danny Rowe not to win those games. Livingston and Falkirk at home, relatively as a club from Glasgow, you look and you say that's maximum points. Braga are not that good an outfit. Seen them at Celtic Park. Granted, Celtic were not a great outfit, but with all due respect to the Portuguese team, you know, it's a game Rangers, I think, should win. The only games it gets slightly are Dundee United away and Kelly away, but again, you would expect Rangers to be taking points from them. So, yeah, if they don't take maximum points, it's not the worst, but I do think that they should be taking maximum points from those games.
And then just a wee word on Dundee. They've only won two games in the league this season, which, well, to be fair, one of them was against Celtic. Do you think just the culmination of this poor form, and I hate dragging it all back to Celtic and Rangers at the time, but this combination of poor form and look, how the level of performance against Rangers, it kind of justifies the Celtic board's decision to kind of get rid of Brendan Rodgers, or if we're to believe it was a resignation, it kind of justifies Brendan Rodgers' decision to kind of go, right, I must not be the man.
Say that again, so I don't know if I picked up on that.
So, like, Dundee have only won two games this season. One of them was against Celtic. They've
Yep.
been poor in pretty much every other game so far. Do you think it kind of justifies Brendan Rodgers thinking of going, I'm not the man, or the Celtic board's decision to kind of give him the bullet? Because if I had Dundee side that bad against everybody else, outplayed Celtic that day, it must be a Brendan Rodgers issue.
I think so. I think it did. I think the results did justify it when you look at the context of Dundee's season. Yes, because they've only managed to win two games. I would say it does justify it. I don't think it fully comes into it, but it definitely plays a part in it because the only other team that Dundee bet was Livingston, if we're purely talking domestic league action. Yeah, I mean, it was a seismic result for Dundee, and probably Stephen Presley's biggest result of the season. So, yeah, to answer the question, yes. But I do think, despite that, Stephen Presley, I think a lot of people in Dundee maybe would have thought that's a big win, but I feel like that's almost their benchmark, and I don't think it should be because Dundee, who's sitting 11th, look like they could be on the way for relegation. So,
I really think the relegation is going to come down between those games, with Livingston and Dundee.
well, if you look at Dundee's next fixtures, right, they're away to Hibs, they're at home to St Mirren, they're away to Celtic, they're away to Aberdeen, and then they're away to Livingston. Chances are they're not going to pick up any points in those four games until they get to Livingston. If you look at Livingston's fixtures and who they are coming up against, I think we already mentioned they're coming out away to Rangers, they're away to Aberdeen, they're away to Motherwell before they're at home to Dundee. So again, three fixtures that they're probably not going to get any points in realistically if we're talking, but so yeah, it's purely it feels like it is going to come down to those two teams.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the quote I said it last year as well, though. But Falkirk have kind of they've come up from the Championship. They've looked all the bit of a Premiership team. Whereas I think Livingston and Dundee, with the greatest of respect, they'll look like two Championship teams just trying their best to cling on for dear life.
Yeah, I would
Would
agree with that. Falkirk have been a not a revelation to the league, but they've came up and they've. I'm going to show my age here, but you've seen Scooby-Doo.
Of
You
course.
remember Scrappy?
Yes.
That's the mentality I feel like Falkirk have shown this season. They've been a little bit "let me at them" type of thing. That Scrappy attitude. It's kind of they've dug in and they've got decent results. So, I think that Falkirk have looked the part this season, very much of a team that are new to the league but are putting up a fight. 100% agree that Livingston and Dundee are almost playing the part of the teams that maybe haven't fit the merit of the league, with the greatest of respect. And I know Dundee fans will say, "Well, we drew with Rangers and we toppled Celtic at Dens." Okay, two decent results. Out of 38, do me a favour.
Yeah, and I think looking at the Championship, there's only 3 points between St Johnstone and Partick Thistle. I'm just gonna say this in the assumption St Johnstone fly back up. I think they'll do well, and then I would at the moment it's dead tight the Championship, but it's Partick Thistle and Celtic Dubrow from third, Dunfermline in fourth. I think you ask any fan in the Scottish Premiership, if you'd swap Livingston or Dundee for one of those, I think every one of them would say yes. Purely
Yeah,
on the basis of how rude the
100%.
football they play. But we will move on from the relegation talk and we'll move back to the other side of the table. We'll move up to current league leaders, Hearts. They dropped points again Is that second game in a row? That's a drop points. No, they beat Dundee.
They beat Dundee.
Kucherenko on goal 25 minutes in, and then just before half time, Lucas Stevenson got Dundee United level. Steph Aggis, I'll just start with Hearts. A lot of people, some people think they're like an elephant in a tree. You don't know how they got up there, but you know they're going to fall down at some point. Do you think this is a sign of the pressure starting to get to them, or can what would they be able to bounce back with this without much measure?
I said prior to the game against Celtic that if Hearts won against Celtic, that would arguably be a statement of intent. And it was, right? Because they went and beat Celtic comfortably. You can talk about moments in that game where, you know, Celtic could have turned it on its head, but didn't happen, right? So you can look at that. You then look at if you come off the back of a strong win against Celtic, you want to almost double that up. You want to batter that home. It's like in baseball, hitting a home run. They missed a trick when they drew with St Mirren, and with all due respect, they were lucky to draw with St Mirren. So they came off of that high against Celtic and then dropped points, won against Dundee and then dropped points again. If I'm a Hearts fan, I'm not worrying because I'm 7 points ahead, right? That's at least two losses that we need to avoid at the moment, right? But you also have to take into account Celtic have a game in hand, which would nudge that gap, if won, down to four. So that cushion of almost two games drops to one if Celtic win that game in hand. I think it is the start of the bottle of Hearts being questioned. I don't necessarily think it's a sign of Hearts' bottle breaking, but it's certainly a sign of that bottle being tested, because you then have, on Sunday after the international break, they go away to Aberdeen. Not a tough place to go. Not an easy place to go. Very tough place to go. They go away to Fir Park in Motherwell. Not an easy place to go. They then face Kilmarnock at home before they're away to Celtic, and at home to St Mirren, and at home to Rangers, and then the Edinburgh Derby. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You've got 6 out of 7 games there before the clock hits and we move into the year of 2026. There's a lot of football to be played in that time. That bottle could well and truly have been broken by the time the clock strikes midnight and we move into that new year. So yes, it's a question of the bottle being strained. I will argue that.
And then kind of just more on this point, after the game, I think there was only like 3 minutes added time, and Derek McKenna said something like, if that was Celtic or Rangers, it would have been 6 or 7 minutes. Obviously, we never watched the full game. We don't know how much added time there should have been. But to me, when I saw those comments in isolation, it just kind of looked like a guy who was like, don't want to say the pressure was getting to him, but it did seem as if it was carrying a bit of a burden on him, being like in such a brilliant position already. It did seem like he was like sort of trying to create a sort of siege mentality, like it's us against them. They want to see us fail, or like, kind of sort of victim mentality in a wee bit.
I get where you're coming from, but I don't mind him saying that. I don't think he's wrong in saying that. I think he's got a point. If it was Celtic or Rangers at the top of the league, it wouldn't have been 3 minutes added. There is, what, 3 goals chopped off. There was, I think, 5 or 6 substitutes. I don't think you can add 3 minutes on for that. I mean, you're talking 6 or 7. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I did see a tweet, though, that also caveated that in that, had Hearts been given the time to play until midnight, they probably still wouldn't have scored. That was obviously someone that was at the match that tweeted that. There's two sides to it. But, I mean, I don't have an issue with what he said. I know a lot of people kicked off about it. But, you know, for me, it's storming a teacup type of thing. People just like to take words. And I'm always the advocate of, you know, everything's down to interpretation. I get where he's coming from.
And then moving on to Dinette, you mentioned there was three offside goals. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sapsford scored all three of the offside goals, is that right?
That is a fact I will not be able to check for you.
Well, I know he scored at least two, but and it's funny because I was about to say it's like this, it was going to be hard to replace the goals of Sam Dalby for last season. I know he's only scored three, but and I know it counts for nothing because they were all offside, but it must be encouraging for Dinette to be like, well, at least we've got a guy who knows where the goal is after losing Sam Dalby, albeit as well for no fee because it was on loan.
Yeah, I mean, Dalby's goals last year we would have said were irreplaceable, and it's no easy feat to take over from a guy that, was your leading man, but I had those goals counted, which, by the way, I have just checked. He did score all three, or technically, he was offside for all three. Yeah, wouldn't have been a bad. I wouldn't have been a bad return.
Aye, absolutely. I think he's got five goals in all competitions this season. So, we've talked a lot. I'm going to just one more point on Dinette before we move on from this game. We've talked a lot about Hearts and their Jamestown analytics and their scouting recruitment this year. The absolute overhaul of that Dinette team is like really good as well. I think Ivan Dochet, he's been brilliant. Sapsford, that we've mentioned, I'm looking at the team as well. I think Kamara in the midfield, Lucas Stevenson, I think was signed the penalty this season after being on loan last year. Dinette scouting network, I would say deserves to be commended a wee bit as well. I don't think it's as good as obviously as Hearts, but it is positive to see Scottish teams going far and wide for rather than going down like the typical English non-league route.
Yeah, I mean the United's recruitment's been has been decent, and it is nice to see that sort of change in direction, that shift in direction, because you look at the quality of players that both Dundee United and Hearts have brought in. Does that then pose a question to your teams like Kilmarnock, even Hibs? Does that pose a question, Motherwell? To them to be like, do we rethink our transfer strategy rather than going down that same old, English lower league level? Do we maybe look elsewhere and look outwards? Because if you look at a team like Bodo Glimt or Midtjylland or, Bran into those smaller leagues, granted bigger budgets, but that style of signing maybe offers more than your traditional, as you mentioned, looking down south route.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this, maybe not January, it's a notoriously hard window to get players, as we've heard many times. But I think in next summer, I think Hart, a lot of people will be looking more towards taking inspiration from Hearts and what they've done. But then they have shown they can do it as well on probably a much smaller scale. I don't think they've got quite the riches that Hearts have got with Tony Bloom, and necessarily not the analytical data that Hearts have got as well. But anyway, we'll see what next summer brings us. I can't believe we're talking about next summer already. It's nearly Christmas. But we'll move on to the last game of this Sunday action before we move on to Saturday. We're doing it in reverse. Aberdeen 1, Motherwell 1. Jesper Karlsson, talking about summer signings, he's a brilliant one. He gave the Dons a lead just about half an hour ago, but 3 minutes later, Elijah just equalised for Motherwell. I'm going to start with Motherwell. Stefan, Jens Bertelsmann has been given a lot of praise, but at the end of the day, that's more drop points for Motherwell there in the top six. At what point does it become a threat? I think they did get two wins on the bounce before the semi final, but obviously you're going to the semi final, albeit probably you could argue deserve to win the semi final, even though they get beat pumped 4-1. But then you go and drop points at Pittodrie, which again, I know it's not an easy place to go. But at what point does it become frustration that you kind of get these wins rather than just accepting, we're playing brilliant? But then it surely gets tested where you're like, but we have to start winning.
Yeah, I mean you have to have the 3 points that go with the good style of football, and I think Motherwell are, missing out on those 3 points. Only two wins, they've drawn six. Listen, it's a good start. Motherwell are relatively high up the table, higher than, they probably expected to be. He's done a good job, but is about finding that. And maybe that's going to come in January. I know we just speak about we just spoke about how signings in January don't ever really come because no one's willing to sell their, you know, their best players. And you know, for a striker, Motherwell need to go for someone that's banging form at their level, that that's going to come in and do the job. It's going to be hard, but that's where Motherwell need to find it. Is they need to find someone that's going to score the goals, that's going to go and kill off games, because right now they're struggling and they're just getting by, and that's no pun intended. Although I did see the tweet about that, and someone was like, "It was a decent goal. How did they just score?" And I'm like, "Anyway, I digress." Yeah, I think for Motherwell fans, they'll be excited by the style of football, but they just need someone to just go and bury that ball home and kill off games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if they're going to get a striker, then please have a guy when he's your name to say, then Apostolos, Stamatolopoulos, even though Hangover may have just nailed that there. But I did,
did.
I did have it right in front of me. But they're getting a lot of their goals, I guess. I think Maswin, you say he... just go check his stats right now before I make myself look stupid.
Do you remember the mother? Was it Lukas Jankovic or Jankovic?
Who scored in the six each game?
In the six each game, you talk about player names that were really difficult to say. His would be up there.
Difficult to spell.
Yeah, it's difficult to spell. I'm trying to think. Is there any other names in Scottish football that have kind of
very good Heslake? It's a classic.
I mean, I would always, well, have maybe a biased point of view, I would always said that was quite easy. I'm trying to think.
Of course, a fortune to get in the back of the top back of the day.
I know, I can imagine. I think his son goes by his first name. I don't necessarily think he's Hesselink. But yeah, I mean, when you look at, yeah, I mean, Scottish football's had names over the years that have been, you know, murder to pronounce. Just a random point while you were fact checking, but I'm trying to get
on there. But it's gonna be, you know, that episode of Still Game where they're like, they're at the pictures and that guy behind them just goes, Robert Wagner. That's right. I'm gonna think of somebody during the episode and I'm gonna just belt them out. The point I was making, Master, they say they're getting goals kinda around the pitch. That's another one for Just, who's kinda plays that 10-0. Then Master, you say he's got five this season already. But moving on to Aberdeen, it's back-to-back draws, but I think, would you say there's a big difference, because I don't think anyone really expected them to get in Larnaca after they get an absolute doing in Athens. On the same week, Larnaca went to Crystal Palace and won. It just shows you the sort of difference a draw can feel when you're the underdog compared to when you're maybe they're one of the favourites against Motherwell, but you kind of get the point I'm trying to make. Like, they'd have been delighted with a point on Thursday, but then come to Sunday you're like, probably not so happy, especially having took the lead to half an hour to go.
Yeah, to a degree, and I think I would normally say on the face of it, yes, Aberdeen would not be pleased with a point against Motherwell, but as we say, Motherwell are not, this season, are not an easy team to face. They're not an easy team to beat. You look at what they did when they went to Celtic Park. It took a last minute goal for Celtic to virtually take all 3 points. They held Rangers to a draw at the start of the season. They've been pesky customers, to say the least. So yeah, on the face of it, Aberdeen could probably be a little bit dismayed about drawing to Motherwell, but I actually don't think on the face of it it is that bad a result, especially off the back of that Larnaca game. So yeah, two decent draws coupled with a win against Kilmarnock, and I think Aberdeen can probably safely say they're moving in the right direction. They've got a couple of games coming up. Hearts is obviously going to be the hardest one, but away to Livingston. They've also got right in time for Christmas. We know, well, Noah, not Noel. I was going to say Noel. Try and make a Christmas joke. Ruined it. Yeah, they've got Noah before away home to St Mirren and away to Dundee. So couple of good chances in there for Aberdeen, especially domestically, to try and get a bit of a foot on the ladder and move themselves up.
And then that game against Hearts that you mentioned, that's going to be live on Sky. Looking forward to that. Even though actually, if I was going to say Celtic's on Sky that day, but I think Celtic's on Sky the night before, 8 o'clock. But Anyway, I'll move on to the Saturday fixtures. The team Celtic are actually live in Sky against St Mirren, and they played in the late kickoff on a Saturday, I believe it was. They fell to 3-0. Aye. 3-0 home defeat to St 3-0 home defeat to Hibs. Hibs goals from Josh Milligan in the first half before Chris Cadden and Miguel Chaiwa completed the victory for the Hibs. It's a big result for Hibs, isn't it, Stefan? I think I predicted before it that they would, I think it was going to be a 1-1 draw. Considering St Mirren just came off the back of that 4-1 win against Motherwell, it's to a degree unexpected and a relief of pressure for David Gray.
Yeah, it's a massive one. Because you think after that semi-final win for St Mirren against Motherwell, you're thinking they'll be chomping at the bit here to try and get themselves moving up the table in the right direction. But Hibs came with a game plan. They executed it really well. And, you know, St Mirren and Paisley, it's not an easy place to go. And they almost just walked right over the top of them. So, yeah, really strong result. Don't think Hibs fans are going to be that complaining, but I think David Gray will be having a big sigh of relief and thinking, pressure's off, we're third, 5 points behind Celtic, 12 points behind Hearts. You know, they'll be running their own race to see where as high as they can finish. And right now, sitting in third isn't a bad place to be.
And then Josh Milligan got the goal. He played centre mid, of course, on Saturday. We've seen him this season a few times play at right back. He got into the last Scotland squad after some, I can't think, maybe that's Anthony Ralston that pulled out. But then this one, Ross McCauley's pulled out and Josh Milligan's nowhere to be seen. Would you, I know he's been playing centre mid the last couple of games, but would you have liked Josh Milligan to have kind of got in and got more experience around that squad?
Yes, if we're talking purely coming in as a replacement for Anthony Ralston and being in the defence, yeah, I think so. It would have been good, but I'm going to be really honest with you. I've gave up the ghost a long time ago trying to analyse players that Steve Clarke brings up to the national team that you're like are ahead of other players that you would expect to come in. I know Conor Barron's been called up to the squad and I know he's played well for Rangers over the last couple of weeks, very much on the fringes under Russell Martin, but yeah, I gave up the ghost a long time ago trying to analyse why Steve Clarke doesn't bring in certain players when there's been a dropout from a call-up. So yeah,
no, I think you're right. I think it's probably the one thing, the one biggest slight a lot of people can have in Steve Clarke is just these squad selections are a bit mental to use, for lack of a better term. But talking about St Mirren now, that's their second home defeat of the season. They obviously, I was at the game they lost to Aberdeen very early on actually, and then it was at that Aberdeen game where I was like, I think from a match report, I was like, I'll check the last time they get beat at home. They never get beat at home, and they were unbeaten at home since first of March, and it was a game against Celtic where, if you remember, Celtic won 5-2, but St Mirren probably should have had the penalty when it was 3-2. So that would have been to make it 3-each.
I'd have disagreed with that, but we
probably spoke about it on the episode of the podcast for the first of March. But if we talk about St Mirren's home form, they've kind of got to nip this in the bud. I know it's maybe I'm exaggerating a wee bit, but two defeats in close proximity to each other at home, especially when they've not been unbeaten, when they were unbeaten there for so long before that, they've kind of gotten up that in the bed and going, now we need to make this Mesa a bit of a fortress if we are to get top six again, surely.
Yeah, 100%. I think the team that's next going to Smisa will probably be licking their lips and thinking, God, we might be able to get something here after Dundee United did and after Hibs did. I don't know who they play, by the way, on the 22nd of November, but yeah, they'll be licking their lips. But yeah, no, 100%. I think that's got to be the aim for a lot of St Mirren fans, and certainly for Stephen Robinson and his team. because that's where a lot of that's where your position is going to really be won and lost, is can you pick up vital points in these home games? Because we know relatively St Mirren, they're a scrappy team. Again, they can pick up points everywhere, but having a really strong home record is going to put them on the right path to potentially top six, but also European football.
Yeah, obviously that next game on the 22nd is at home to Celtic. It's a warm-up for the cup final on the 14th of December at Hampden. It's a massive achievement that St Mirren have got themselves to a final,
yeah,
isn't it, Stefan? And what's your take on, there's been a lot of, I don't want to say controversy, I don't know how it's controversial that they've been offered allocation of the stadium, but what's your take on the whole allocation gate, if we can even call it that?
I have to say, I think it's embarrassing from one section to be polite about it. I've never seen, and I think this is maybe a Scottish football thing, where we overanalyze everything, right? We never take anything for face value. We're always cynical about it. And St Mirren and Celtic will play in a cup final at a neutral venue, where rightfully so, the tickets should be allocated half and half. And if St Mirren can sell their section out, great, because undoubtedly Celtic will sell theirs out. That's fine, no problems with it. I've no problem with St Mirren and how they go about and do their ticket allocation and how many supporters are able to do it. No problem with it, because when it comes to that deadline on the 19th of November, St Mirren will have sold the tickets that they've been allocated, and the rest that they haven't sold will then be said, okay, Celtic, go and sell them. But Celtic were already getting roughly, would be getting about probably about 20,000 anyway. So I don't see the problem about it. And I've seen a lot of tweets from certain people kicking up a fuss over it, and I don't understand why they're getting so loud about it. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I think that it should just be part and parcel, is the stadium gets split in half, and then if you can't sell the tickets, then they go to the other team if they've sold out their allocation. That's just how it should be.
But I think in Scottish football there's this narrative that, and I think this maybe stems from Celtic and Rangers, right, is obviously both teams will go and whoever's playing in the final will bring a sizeable support, and there'll always be that element of, well, we've got a bigger fan base, so we should be allocated more tickets. It's not how it works, right? But I think this also adds fuel to the fire, is having, you know how it's described as a Celtic end or the Rangers end, depending. If Celtic are at a cup final, they'll always play in the east part of the city, section of the stadium. And if it's Rangers, they'll play in the west part section of the stadium, right? I think that stems from it. I think there's a little bit of arrogance and entitlement about it, in my opinion. And I'm not sure I'm the biggest fan of it, especially for a neutral venue. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. I think there obviously is policing issues and stuff that go into it. And then I think even for this game anyway, for St Mirren fans coming from Paisley, they'd be in the west stand anyway. But I know, yeah, what you're saying, how it is a bit mental that the kind of two ends of a neutral venue get referred to as a Celtic end and the Rangers end. I know what you're saying.
Okay, good. Yeah, but I mean, I think that factors into it as well. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people having a head loss over. I put a tweet out. Someone tweeted something really stupid, and it was like, "Oh, calm down. You support a team like St Mirren, you know, go and support a big club." And I'm like, "You've just outed yourself as a glory hunter." Like, I don't know if people realise this, but they can delete the things they post on the internet, because I would hate to post something and look like a complete fool. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people should probably delete their tweets, because it's slightly embarrassing.
And then just one last thing in the cup final. I made a touch on it earlier when we spoke about the Celtic game. Do you think Martin O'Neill still going to be there, or do you think he'll be replaced by then? Also, the favourites just now seem to be Kieran McKenna of Ipswich, Wilfred Nancy of Columbus Crew, and Knethel Knutson of Bodo Glimt. Would you make of those three, and do you think any of them will be here before the cup final?
I think, if you ask me what I want and what I think, they're two separate things. I think, based off of what I've heard, and I've seen online and on the news, I think Celtic will have an appointment in imminently, maybe within the next week and a half. So no, I don't think Martin O'Neill will get the cup final. But what I want to happen is I would want Martin O'Neill to continue up until the cup final, wins the cup final. I don't think his legacy will ever unattach from what he's done, despite the results that he has in this small tenure. I don't think that ever impacts anything. I think it can only enhance his legacy, if that. But I would actually like to see him continue up until at least February, when Ghetto Knutson finishes up with Bodo Glimt, because I know apparently his contract ends in December, but he wants to see the Champions League out with Bodo if they get through. Then I would like to see him come in and take over the reins from Martin O'Neill. That would be my ideal solution. Kieran McKenna from Ipswich, I think that's going to be a really hard task to bring him away from that. I think it would be a decent enough appointment. It has its risks. I think all appointments have their risk. I don't know anything about Wilfried Nancy, from what he's done in his time in the MLS. I don't necessarily think he's the right candidate on paper, but I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of slating on people because they've worked in a lesser known league, because Ange Postecoglou walked into this country and ripped it up. So what I want to happen would be Knutson. What I think will happen will be someone else will be in just in time for the cup final.
Cool. I don't know anything more than MDLs, but I think it's going to be Wilfried Nancy. It's just the sort of feeling that I've got. No, I'm not entirely against it, but anyway, we've spoken enough about Celtic. We'll move on to the last game of the weekend. I don't know, it was the first game played of the weekend. It was only Saturday 3 o'clock game. It was Falkirk 1 and Livingston 1. Brian Graham scoring a penalty for Falkirk before an 89th minute equaliser for Danny Wilson got a point for the Lions. It's funny, I seen the score come in and I was like, Danny Wilson scoring all the time, and then I checked, it's his first goal this season in the league. It's only because I was at the game where he scored against Partick Thistle in the playoffs, and then he scored, I remember him scoring in both games in the playoff against Ross County. So I just had in my head that he's scoring at a time, but that was his first goal for a few months. Livingston are a sort of bogey team for Falkirk. These are two teams that came up for the championship. I think I don't know if Falkirk, they must have beat them at least once surely last season, but then since they've came up, they could beat earlier this season off them. I think there was a stage, I think Livingston got like a big 3 or 4-0 win against them, maybe the end of last season, or maybe the start of this season, maybe.
No, it was the start of this season.
Start of this season, I had that in my head there. Why do you think it is that, like, Falkirk, we spoke about Falkirk earlier, they've came up and they've, I wouldn't say they've pulled up trees exactly, but they've done it really better, really good for a promoted side. Why do you think they struggle against Livingston so bad, who are, as we again touched on earlier, probably one of the weaker sides?
I think maybe just the fact that they know each other, right? They went and played each other last season. I think it's that where you're sizing up your old enemy almost as a guy you've came up against a lot within the last few seasons. I think it's just going to be a case of that. I think they probably know how to play against each other, and Livingston know how to get the better of the way Falkirk set up. I don't think it's anything more than that. Is it a bogey team? Yeah, potentially to the degree, but I would say it's just familiarity, I guess.
And then would you agree that it's like on the flip side, would you basically say it's the same thing, how Livingston tend to do better against Falkirk but not as well against other teams? You know, it's like the sort of familiarity.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously Livingston were out the league last season, so look, will they still be familiar with coming up against your Aberdeens, your Dundee Uniteds, your Celtics, your Rangers? Of course they will, but I think it's easier to get a result against Falkirk than it is to get a result against your Aberdeens, your Dundee Uniteds, your Celtics, your Rangers. So Aye.
Well, not much else really to talk about for that game. It was, it's what you expected from a Falkirk Limited game. Falkirk probably deserved to win, but they did obviously drop points as well. It's not the first time that we said that about Falkirk though this season. Is that going to come back to bite them on, for lack of a better word, the backside as we go into the crunch bit of the season? Or do you think Falkirk have gotten way more than enough to kind of be comfortably surviving?
I think Falkirk will comfortably be. I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be about eighth, seventh, eighth. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I've got to agree. I'm looking at the next fixtures though. Dundee away, Rangers away, Falkirk at home, then Hibs away, Hearts at home. That's five big games. Do you see them getting more many points from that?
No. Say them again to me, Rangers.
Dundee away, Rangers away, Motherwell at home, Hibs away, Hearts at home.
I mean, I think it's going to be tough. I think no, I think it's going to be tough.
No, it's just I think if you look at their recent form, they've got only got one loss, one loss, one loss. Sound like Jonathan Ross. One loss in the last six games, and then if I'm going to put my neck in, I can see them losing the next five games. So it just goes to show you how long a wee bit of form can go in this league. You know what I mean?
100%. I think that's the beautiful thing about the league is everything can very much, go out with the dishwater, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that wraps up the recap of the weekend's action. But I'm not. I was going to say I'm surprising you with a wee quiz, but I did warn you. I gave you a wee bit of preempt before we recorded, Stefan, didn't I? We're doing a classic guess of player.
You did.
Guess of player because it was just. It's easy to do guess of player. You just have to go with a player and get on the Wikipedia. So we will just kick things off. Oh, this I don't. That I think it looks easy just because I'm looking at it, but then I'm going to give you the years to kind of just get you in the right ballpark, and then I've got a big clue at the end if you can't get them afterwards.
Oh, jeez, nervous.
So he started his career in 2007 at Hearts and left in 2014. In between, had a couple of loan spells at Queen of the South, by the way, and it'll be any help. So that's 2007 to 2014
Can
at
I
Hearts.
give a shout quickly on who I think it is?
Go for it.
Is it Jamie Walker?
No, it's not Jamie Walker.
Damn it! Okay.
I guess that would have been good. Spent one season, 2014, 2015, at Falkirk, and then would spend. I think I know more for Hearts, but I wouldn't argue if somebody said that I know more for this next team. 2015 to 2020, he was at Kilmarnock, and then but he did. From 2019 and 2020, probably the season got curtailed by COVID. He did go out on loan to Alloa, but I don't know if that's much help. 2020 to 2023, he left for Raith Rovers, and then 2023 to 2024, he spent a season at Greenock Morton. And from 2024 to onwards, I would have thought this guy is retired, but apparently still playing. This is a big clue if you'll know who it is. If you've seen this transfer, except for Hearts B, Heart of Midlothian B, and he's apparently still playing at the age of 39.
Well, there's
Can give you a
that's
big
actually that.
clue, maybe if
No.
he's never scored a goal in his career, if that gives you any sort of inkling of where he might play. On the park.
Yeah, I know. I think I know who it is. Jack Cameron.
It's not Jack Gamble. You see with
Oh
your
my
first guess when
God.
you said Jamie. I thought you had it. Jay.
I know who. Jamie McDonald
Aye, there we go. I see because see when I said the
gets
first thing.
stuffed, man.
See when you said Jamie, I was like, there's no way he's got it. But Jamie McDonald's.
Okay, I mean, I'll
Oh.
take it. I still guessed that. I mean, I'm
You
raging,
got it.
but.
It was like, it was like, it was was like when somebody's desperate scoring, you just keep passing them and just walk into the net for them.
That's Aye, pretty much. That was decent. I liked that. So you said 2007 to 2014. I was like, Jamie Walker, right? Because I know he left Hearts and came back. So I never listened to the question fully. Great. But yeah, no, that was decent. Jamie McDonald, yeah. See, when you said to me, when you said of Jamie, I was literally about to say to you, Marion Kello. And I've got no idea why he just came into my head. And I was like, nah, Kello? Wasn't he Jamie Kello? And then I was going to say Marion Kello, but no. That's a decent one. I like that.
It's good. It's good route to go down. I'm thinking as well, for the next time we've got somebody else on for cap or no cap, I might go like the third choice keeper route, because they might think, like, oh, did they get a cap? You know what I mean? Like,
I like that.
Aye. So, we'll put that on the shelf for now. That rounds up today's episode of Scottish Football Covered. I've been Mac, joined by Stefan. Don't know if we'll be back next week because obviously Scotland are playing. Quite before we go, Stefan, score prediction for the Scotland, Greece, and Scotland, Denmark games?
Scotland, Greece. I'm going to be really positive. I think Scotland will beat Greece in Athens. I'm going to say 2-1. And I'm going to be, again, going to be really positive. I'm going to say Scotland are going to beat Denmark 1-0, last minute winner. I'll go with that. Can't see anything past it, just because I really want to be positive.
I'll be very pessimistic then. I think Scotland are going to draw 0-0 in Athens, and they're going to get beat 3-0 after Denmark at Hampden. Hopefully I've jinxed it. We'll be back with you the week after that. Maybe Scotland have qualified for the World Cup. Who knows? Don't forget to join in on the conversation on Twitter at SFCovered. And if you want to see the guests of the Kildare Path again, that'll be up on TikTok in the next coming days as well. Follow us there at Scottish Football Covered. And of course, enjoy the rest of your week and come on to Scotland.